Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the blind Chinese dissident who took refuge in the U.S. Embassy in Beijing suddenly finds himself living in Lower Manhattan. We'll talk to his mentor at NYU, Professor Jerome Cohen, about Chen Guangchun's fight for human rights and about making the lifestyle transition from rural China to Greenwich Village. That's got to be a shock. Also today, Univision news anchor Jorge Ramos, a rock star around the country in Latino circles. Andrew Kohut from the Pew Survey on the increasingly tough job of getting people to answer political polls at all. And our tour of New York's lesser-known museums continues at the Queens Farm Museum today. We'll get to Jerome Cohen, mentor of Chen Guangchun, in just 60 seconds. Just want to remind you that our spring membership drive is almost over. It ends tomorrow. After tomorrow, you won't hear another day of pledge programming until October. Yay. So if you've been meaning to do it during this pledge week but haven't gotten around to it yet, please get it done right now. And remember also that the final contest of the drive is in effect right now and closes at noon. That's the $4,000 in travel vouchers from Viama.com. Go anywhere that you choose if you are the winner. On us, up to $4,000. You have until noon to be in for that drawing. So we humbly request that you help us pay the bills here at WNYC at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. We'll talk about it more later, but if it works for you, maybe you can get your pledge in right now. Thanks so much to everybody. And we are so delighted to begin today with NYU Asia Studies professor Jerome Cohen, a mentor to Chen Guangchun, as I said, the Chinese human rights activist who took refuge in the U.S. Embassy in Beijing and suddenly finds himself living in Greenwich Village. He arrived on Saturday with his wife and two kids, yes, two kids, ages 6 and 10. They now live in NYU graduate student housing, a little different from their home in rural China. Professor Cohen himself is an expert in Chinese law and a human rights activist who has helped several other dissidents win their freedom over the years prior to Mr. Chen. Professor Cohen, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
Can you tell us how you first met Mr. Chen and how you became close with him?
It was very lucky. 9 years ago, about this time, I got a call from the State Department telling me they had an important international visitor in the field of law. I said, I'm too busy to meet him. I'm grading my exams. I have to go to China in a couple of days. This man hasn't even formally studied law. Don't bother me. And they said, you're really going to want to meet this man. Finally, I said, I'll give him half an hour. Well, we ended up 4 hours. He's a marvelous, charismatic person, and you want to know more about him when you meet him.
What will he be doing at NYU exactly?
Well, we're tailoring a course of instruction. We were talking with him at dinner last night about it. It will consist of comparative law, international law, Anglo-American law, and English. He's got to make a serious attempt at English. He seems very eager to do so. And he'll also want to have some time allocated for political activity because he's very concerned about people he left behind in China, people in his home village, including his nephew, who's under incommunicado criminal detention, and people in Beijing who helped him when he managed to reach Beijing and before he got to the American embassy.
Is this what he wanted all along when he escaped from house arrest to the U.S. embassy in Beijing, to come here?
No, he wants to live in China. He's only 40 years old. Before he was 30, he was already playing an important role in trying to bring justice to the Chinese countryside. He doesn't want to spend the next 40 years as an exile. He wants to see China work toward a rule of law. He wants to play a part in it.
What's your understanding of what happened after Mr. Chen left the U.S. embassy the first time, first saying he wanted to stay in China and then changing his mind and saying he wanted to leave the country? There have been competing versions of those events in the press, distorted probably by various people's politics. What's your best understanding from speaking with Mr. Chen?
You know, it was a succession of mishaps that had a good ending. He had accepted this idea after he and I had talked over the phones for several hours about whether he should, of studying law in China, trying to stay in China. And it was a gamble. He wanted to take it. He didn't want to leave. But when he got to the hospital, he discovered his wife had recently been again tortured by the police in their village. He discovered that he hadn't been able to talk with friends in the Chinese human rights community who then were given telephone access to him. And they said, "You're crazy. Don't take the risk. Don't you know what the authorities have been doing to us? Go back to the embassy. Get out of the country. Do anything but stay here and take this risk." And then the media started to call him. And he looked around. "Where's my food? They haven't given me my dinner. And where's the U.S. embassy escort I had been promised?" He had gone home thinking the Chuns needed privacy, and he was exhausted because the embassy people had been negotiating around the clock for days. And he panicked, and he thought, "I've made a mistake. I want to leave the country." And our people in the embassy were sound asleep. This was about 3 a.m. when he did this. And he immediately told the world because AP and other media were allowed access to him. And when our people woke up, they had a new problem, how to get him out of the country. And fortunately, good negotiations between the U.S. and the Chinese officials did lead to a very happy result. But that was not the result that anyone contemplated at the beginning.
Yeah. So did the Obama administration, in your opinion, bungle the initial negotiations or fail to show backbone by originally letting Mr. Chen leave the embassy, as some have charged?
No, not at all. These were the ablest people American society can muster for foreign policy purposes. They worked, as I said, around the clock. They came up with a creative, innovative solution that would have allowed him, Mr. Chen, to stay in China, study law as he's always wanted to do, and try to play a role in Chinese society again, despite the current repressive climate in China.
My special guest on WNYC, NYU Asia Studies professor Jerome Cohen, a mentor to Chinese human rights activist Chen Guangcheng, who as of Saturday is now a resident of Greenwich Village. He has come here after having holed up in the U.S. Embassy here to study law and other things at NYU. Professor Cohen, help us understand Mr. Chen's activism in China. Is it more opposed to forced abortions and forced sterilizations as ways to enforce the one-child policy, or more opposed to the one-child policy itself?
It really had nothing to do with the one-child policy, birth control, etc., at the beginning. That was only the ultimate issue. What got him into human rights was his desire to protect the disabled. He has been blind since he was 5 months old. He wasn't allowed to go to school till he was 13. He was always regarded as a burden on his community rather than somebody who is an object of sympathy. He wanted to change that situation, not just for himself, but also for other people. That drove him to be interested in human rights. And he helped many people with tax problems, with failure to get a business license, with other forms of discrimination. It was only years later that he began to get very depressed at the forced abortions, forced sterilizations, and worst of all, the attacks on the families of women who fled to avoid those procedures.
Some of his most vocal supporters in the United States have been evangelical Christians and other anti-abortion activists who love that Mr. Chen speaks out against abortions in China. Do you think in American terms he would be pro-life as opposed to pro-choice?
Well, we'll have to discuss that with him. I think he understands China's need for birth control. This has been very important in China's fantastic economic progress. What he's more concerned with is civil liberties, the right to speak out on any question, the right to be free from arbitrary government detention, the right to be free of torture. That's what he wants to write a book, among other things, about the forms of torture to which Chinese prisoners are subjected. And he had 4 years and 3 months of experience with it.
What was his experience with torture? How did they torture him, as far as you know?
many ways. One way was the man has a debilitating a gastroenterological disease. They wouldn't give him adequate medicine. They wouldn't give him adequate medical attention. He wasn't allowed to go outside to see doctors of his own choosing. And, of course, forced separation from his wife. He's never before, in recent years since he met her, been without her assistance. But for 4 years and 3 months, he was separated from her. She's always, when I met him in New York, she was there. She's his advisor. She's a highly intelligent, marvelous person. And separation from her and torture to him was what happened to his children. Mm. And to his wife, they were imprisoned at home. They built a prison around his very poor family residence. I've been there. I spent several days at their farmhouse. You can't imagine more simple, humbler conditions. And there are many ways, including psychological ways, to torture people.
His number one sponsor here, in addition to you, seems to be the evangelical pastor Bob Fu from Midland, Texas, who I realize was a veteran of Tiananmen Square, but who also former President Bush praised recently for securing a notebook with the Book of Revelation, handwritten by Chinese prisoners. And in Congress, it was Chris Smith of New Jersey, one of the leading anti-abortion members. What should people think about all of that in relation to Chen?
Well, I think they should understand that all the major human rights organizations have supported Mr. Chen. You have many wonderful organizations. In addition to China Aid, you've got Human Rights in China that's done remarkable work for him as well as others. Human Rights Watch, China Human Rights Development. You've got Human Rights First. You've got Amnesty International. I don't think we should associate Mr. Chen with one specific religious organization or with one particular political cause, however important it is. People are trying, of course, to associate him with whatever cause they have, and you'd be amazed. I've been inundated with every organization, not just human rights organizations, trying to get a piece of the action.
I could imagine. How much of a culture shock do you think it is or will be for Mr. Chen, who comes from rural China, as you just described, to live in Greenwich Village, of all places?
Well, we met at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. He was here for several days. He had a four-week tour with his wife around the country, learning about our efforts to curb discrimination and our legal system. So he's been here before. He's a highly sophisticated person for a farm boy. He used to go to Beijing, Shanghai, other places. He was very effective in affecting legal change. For example, in Beijing, Beijing was discriminating against disabled people by charging them fares they were not authorized to charge. And he changed that in Beijing, not just in his farmhouse area. So this is a man of immense ability, and he's very able to analyze problems objectively and to consider how to proceed. He's one of the most impressive people I've met. When I first met him, I thought he has the potential to become China's equivalent of Mahatma Gandhi.
Well, when the time is right, hopefully you and he will come down to our studio here in Tribeca and be on the show together. You could translate for him maybe when you think the time is right. But before,
well,
go ahead.
He'll be delighted to do that.
I'm glad to hear it. As his mentor here in New York, before you go, what about New York will you want to show him or want him to experience?
Well, he's already got invitations from many organizations, not just lawyers' organizations or Asia organizations. Religious organizations want to hear from him. He's going to learn a lot. His children, of course, have already taken to the parks, etc. He and his family will enjoy New York, I think, in the broadest sense, despite the fact the man is absolutely blind.
And you are 81. You've been fighting for human rights and other reforms in China for many years. You've lived there but left after Tiananmen Square, I understand. How optimistic are you about the future?
In the long run, very optimistic. In the medium run, fairly optimistic. In the immediate, quite pessimistic. But there will be a new party leadership selected in November. Never has there been more ferment in China calling for the development of a genuine rule of law and protection of human rights. The internet, social media, microblogging, this is making a very big change. And the Chinese people, particularly those who haven't had access to money, jobs, connections, these are the people who are going to benefit from trying to make the central government's rules followed by both the central government and local authorities.
NYU Asian law professor and human rights activist and now mentor to dissident Chen Guangcheng, who is now living at NYU Graduate Housing. Jerome Cohen, it's been an honor. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, a couple of more special guests. We will speak to a nun, a rare interview with a U.S. nun who will speak out about the Vatican speaking out against American nuns, along with Father James Martin, who some of you may know as the official chaplain of the Colbert Report. So Sister Mary and Father Martin coming up next here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Stay with us.